Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Awful lot coming up here. Nick Wright joins us in about 20 minutes. I booked him on the show today. I texted him and he's like, I have compliments about Steph Curry. I wrote back, I'm like, duh. It's about time. I do love waking up in a world that finds out that Steph Curry is a pretty good basketball player. And as I said at the top of the show, feels like that happens about 4 or 5 times a year. Those who were on the out come into the circle of love. And then whatever, 3-game losing streak, and they forget about it. Look, everything you could have ever wanted out of Steph Curry, saying, well, he's had too much success on too talented a teams for me to respect him. Well, how would you like him to lead the NBA in scoring, dragging a team of Draymond Green, Andrew Wiggins, G-leaguers on an 8-man rotation into the playoffs? What more do you want? Oh, well, his high-value second overall pick in the draft could disappear about halfway through. I guess I could make things a little bit more difficult, which it did. What about Kelly Oubre vanishing? Yeah, that happened too. And it's crazy how much those things opened it up for Steph, who in his last 26 games of the season averaged 37 points per game. Guys, absolutely amazing. There is no doubt that Steve Kerr thinks that this guy just had one of the great seasons of his career.
Well, he's never been better. I can say that. He's been great for a long time, though, so it's hard to say he's at his best now, because he's been like this for years. I think what's different this year is just the supporting cast is different. You know, we've got a much younger team. He's been asked to do a lot more with this group, and he's gone above and beyond what we've asked of him. So just an incredible season, and that's, I'll just leave it at that. He's never been better than he is right now.
Never been better than he is right now. That is obviously because there's two MVPs already sitting on the shelf, and it's hard to get a lot better than that. It's hard to get better than winning NBA titles, but here is Curry. In the shallowest end of the pool he's ever swam in talent-wise since they started going to NBA finals, they are playing the Los Angeles Lakers Wednesday night. Win and you're in. Lose and, well, the loser of the Spurs-Memphis game is going to be waiting for you. So it's not a...
The winner.
Excuse me. Thank you very, very much. The winner of that game. Yeah, the loser of that game gets eliminated.
Indeed.
That's the beauty of the Warriors beating the Memphis Grizzlies, because they lost that one-and-done element to this season. And I just think that there is no doubt that the play-in has been a wild success. Not for the Warriors specifically, for the overall NBA. And you could say, well, it didn't really crank out the matchups that are sexy. Hornets, Pacers, that's a game you probably skip on League Pass in the regular season. Wizards, Celtics, I fell asleep telling you about it. You put playoffs on the line, and now all of a sudden things mean more. It's going to mean more to the players, and you never know when a good NBA game could break out.
Well, and just to your do-or-die point, right? How many teams in the NCAA tournament every year interest you specifically on their own merits? Like, I know for me, the answer is never more than 3, and usually 0.
I have a clear 1.
You have 1. But, like, most people, I would think, max out at 4 or 5. And yet, we watch dozens and dozens of games with teams we don't care about because the stakes matter.
Right.
Well, because your bracket matters.
Yeah, but you can make a bracket for this. You know, you could do a playoff bracket for NBA if you want to. There will be plenty of gambling opportunities, Rick.
Yeah, but nobody's doing a bracket as a gambling opportunity.
Fair enough. You can gamble on the Charlotte Hornets, though. And look, Pacers may be as boring as it gets. The Hornets are not. With LaMelo Ball, this was a team that probably would have finished in the top six in the Eastern Conference. That's a team I want to watch.
I guess. I mean, the Hornets have not moved me at any point. They've been, at their best, they were hovering around 500, usually a game or two below.
But exciting, Ray.
On the other hand, there's Indiana, whose players want to murder their coach.
That's a bad situation.
Yeah, I mean, that game,
but
that game
a reason
has
to
an
watch,
excellent
right?
chance. No, that game has an excellent chance to be 128-95.
But also, potentially a chance for one of the Indiana Pacer players to do violence upon their coach. So, you know.
They're not going to do that on the court.
You don't know, right?
No, they had. I'll tell you what. I believe that any quality player will know the value of having no witnesses.
Yeah, that's true. You're right. That Pacers story, though, if people haven't read about what's going on,
it's a dumpster fire.
Yeah, it's as wacky as it gets when it comes to a coach losing the entire locker room in a matter of moments.
It's Matt Patricia like, shall we just
That's
say?
That's a good comparison.
Except that Matt Patricia needed a couple of years to do that.
Yes,
you're
much
right.
Faster.
This one was basically by Christmas.
All right, no more Pacers, no more Lions, no more Patricia. Back to Curry we go, who set a new personal record, 22 attempts on threes yesterday. He made 9 of them. He finished with 46 points. It's the third most threes ever taken in an NBA game. I still classify it as not enough for that guy. Mm-hmm. When Steph shoots at least 15 threes this year, the Warriors are 12-5. When he shoots 20-plus threes this year, they are 3-1. Go ahead. Launch it, kiddo. Let her rip. Let her rip. I've been doing shows about this for a month. More Steph Curry. Seems to be working. Guys average 37. Keep doing it. Keep shooting it. They're just there's nothing that can go wrong with Curry shooting a shot. Even if he misses it. I'm cool with it. Every day. All the time.
Ken Bazemore is really spacing the floor.
Shut up. I don't want to just. If Kent Bazemore was going to take 10 shots tonight, I'd rather have him take 2 and give Curry 8 more. Well, what if Curry's got a lot of people on? Curry could have a power forward getting a piggyback ride. I'd want him to shoot it more.
I think if a power forward is taking a piggyback ride.
Don't focus on the piggyback ride, Ray. That's not my point.
No, but the point is there's a limitation to even this.
Well, at that point, I'd want a foul called more so
probably
than Curry shooting.
Probably wouldn't get it.
Hey, you're right. You might not get it.
Tony Brothers is working the game.
Yesterday is a tough, that is not actually the game Steph Curry wants to have. You know, it was not an efficient scoring game. He turned the ball over 7 times. And yet, 46 points plus 14 on the night and a 12-point win in a, you know, very important playoff-like situation. So
dagger.
It is hard to argue with your point, and especially when now it's down to 8 guys. Like, on the other hand, you know, Andrew Wiggins was 9 for 16. Jordan Poole, 5 for 9 last night. I could have let them take a few of those 36 and been okay with that, too. And maybe more to the point, no one is going to argue where we're at right now. Every night for the Warriors to do anything interesting or worthwhile, it's got to be Steph night. Right. Steph's got to go nuts. At the same time, it can't be just him either. They're going to have Steph going nuts and also Jordan Poole doing what he's been able to do for the last 10 or 15 games, and also some contributions from Wiggins and Bazemore. And, you know, if they actually want to be relevant, it's all got to fall into place at once.
No doubt. The price of poker for the rest of the basketball team has gone up tremendously. Curry's been anteing in, no problem. He's got that cash all season long. The rest of the team is about to enter the high rollers room, some of them for the first time. And what you do in that room, boy, it's a big, big deal. I do know that Curry, he's feeling it right now. Feeling it, feeling himself. We saw his belly last night.
There's a little bit of everything. Like I said, it's a different vibe when you know the game has consequences and means something, and especially in those moments. It is nice to have some sort of an atmosphere in terms of a home court advantage with fans in the building going crazy. it was loud in there for how many people were in there. And we've missed that for a very, very long time. So, you know, we've had some moments early in the season where we had big comebacks. And you look up in the stands, there's nobody up there. You don't really, it's like kind of awkward. You don't know what to do. So, like, nights like tonight, that's what we play for, to get the fans involved and appreciate that that love and that energy. And shout out to Baron Davis. I definitely channeled my Kirilenko moment. I ain't dunk on nobody, but I wanted to channel the same celebration. So shout out to BD.
Shout out to the nipple. I saw Steph Curry's nipple last night. I've never seen the nipple before. So
our own producer Kyle Madsen pointed out that an anagram of play-in is a nipple if you spell it incorrectly.
Well, then, what better value of the word anagram?
If you could just drop on Twitter
letters when you feel like it. Sure.
Look, it'd make a license plate.
I love Fired Up Steph, and I do think that there is something to that part of this year. I think we've so easily and quickly in the past dismissed Steph in terms of being that guy who can get everyone fired up, not with the shots. We know he can get everybody fired up draining ridiculous threes, but that sort of vocal, energetic presence who screams and pulls his shirt up. You know, we see the shimmies, but he's not really the screamer guy. I think this year, the triple teams and the constant questions from media about what he's capable of and sort of detracting him after all he's accomplished, like, I think he's feeling it a little bit, and I think there is a little bit of vindication for him that he feels.
It's going to be harder to do that segment going forward. And by the way, Nick Wright joins us in about 8 minutes. Draymond Green. Again, if Curry's frosty, I want Draymond Green to be like igloo-level frosty, and you know Draymond is feeling it when he's still playing defense and picking up technical fouls in a post-game interview. Here is Kalena Azubuike's Q&A with Draymond last night. Hide the kids.
People are talking about, oh, you guys are so small and Valanciunas was going to take advantage of his size, which he did a good job. But are you guys almost a joint?
Dog. Straight like that. I don't know how else to tell you. People have been going at me for years with centers. They've been going at Loon for years. That ain't work yet. We dogs, so keep trying it.
Boom. That's what I want. I want frosty, angry, pissed off at all times, picking up technical fouls, swearing in interviews, getting bleeped. That's the Draymond we want in the postseason. Give me more, please. Tell me about Jordan Poole's night, Draymond.
Michigan State, it is what it is.
Oh, by the way, this is great because he's like, it's Michigan State. It is what it is, but I like him.
Michigan State, it is what it is. That's my guy. You know, the resiliency that he's shown, you know, getting sent down to the G League bubble and playing his off down there and coming back up and picking up right where he left off at in the bubble has been incredible. And, you know, that's been a big reason, you know, we've grown is, you know, that score coming off the bench. And he's been incredible for us. And, you know, most importantly, he's growing defensively. You know, the play with Ja Morant a couple months ago, that's a foul. And, you know, he goes vertical. He doesn't get the foul, and it was a successful challenge for us. Those are the plays for Jordan that keeps him on the floor and allows him to do what he do best, which is he's a scorer and a playmaker. You know, I think one of the reasons he struggled last year, we all wanted him to just be a shooter.
Yeah.
And, you know, the difference in his game is he has the ball in his hands more, and he's more than just a shooter. He can shoot, but he's a great playmaker, and he can get to the cup. So it's incredible to see the growth, JP.
You talk about, you know, hey, they rested everybody Saturday night against New Orleans. Jordan Poole was a monster in that game. And that is the confidence bounce in his step that I hope carries him through a really, really interesting postseason, however long this goes. I believe, this is going to sound soccery. I believe in Jordan Poole. I believe in Jordan Poole certainly more now than at the beginning of this year. Didn't really believe at all last year. Felt like a huge reach. That guy has put in so much work, and it's paying off. And we have watched Poole and Juan Toscano-Anderson change their basketball careers this season. And it really feels like most of that work got done in the last 30 games.
I think most of the work of the season got done in the last 30 games. Stephen Curry was a dramatically better player in the last 30 games. 26, to be exact. Draymond Green became a better rebounder and distributor in the last 26 games. The only guy who didn't really change his profile that much was Wiggins.
And even he was a little better, right?
A little better offensively, but his defense didn't become dramatically better.
Yeah, agreed.
So in a lot of ways, this is a team that, and it's fair to say this, I think, they got hot at seemingly the very wrong time, only they stayed hot. You shouldn't be able to carry this kind of play over almost 30 games unless you are an elite team. So in a lot of ways, this almost doesn't make sense because this is not an elite team by any means. I mean, they're a very good defensive team. They're hard to play. But, you know, they're not a team that you're going to look at and go, yeah, they're going to be in the conference final. They've just managed to stay who they are for as long as they have because one guy has been otherworldly and has benefited everybody else by being otherworldly.
Yeah. A couple things. First of all, on Poole, there's a couple things that jump out to me about him. Number one, and I think Draymond kind of alluded to this, I really think the biggest problem for him adjusting to the NBA and getting to where he's at now was he was miscast as a true two guard and more of a shooter. And the reality is, even as he's shot the ball much better from distance over this season and really the last, you know, 20, 30 games, he's not a shooter. He's a scorer.
Right.
He's just as good getting to the rim as
he was a chucker.
Right. And I think the reality is, like, college basketball no longer tells you much about what a guy's going to be at the pro level. It's just not that indicative. But his ability to get to and finish around the rim is really impressive, and sort of he has this awkwardness, this kind of controlled chaos that he's started to figure out that I think he has the chance to be a really special scorer in this league. And I don't know if he'll ever be an all-star, but the sort of guy that can be a huge benefit to you off your bench in the mold of like a Jordan Clarkson, but with more passing.
Because
he actually passes the ball.
How about just Jordan Clarkson, but just shoot it a little less?
We'll pass it sometimes.
Right. And
right?
Clarkson isn't good at that. Poole might be.
I think he is. And I think he sees the floor a lot better than Jordan Clarkson, for one thing. I mean, whether he's passing it more actively or not, I don't know. But he definitely sees the floor better. He's had a couple games with pretty big assist numbers. So, boy, I think that development of Jordan Poole over the last 20 games is as big for the Warriors offseason as almost anything, because it's one less thing you feel like is a real serious need heading into next year. Like, I'm pretty comfortable with Jordan Poole as my first guard off the bench, especially if he gets a little better on defense.
He can't play on this team if he doesn't have a sense of the floor. And he can't play on this team if all he is a chucker.
Right.
I mean, that's just, I mean, what we've seen this year, I think in a lot of subtle ways, is that Steve Kerr has minimal tolerance for guys who don't get it. You either figure it out or you're, you know, DNPCD for the rest of the year.
You know, I was thinking a lot about when I asked Steve Kerr, you know, did you think about mentioning we could maybe use a big to just add to the roster at this time of need? And he said, really, I just don't think there's anyone out there who can help us. And then they end up signing Jordan Bell, who I think it's pretty clear that there were guys on the market at the time I asked the question who were objectively better NBA basketball players than Jordan Bell. But I think Steve Kerr really believes, and I think this has pretty much been borne out by results, that a better player in a vacuum does not make a better Golden State Warrior, because what they do is really pretty specific, and it really does take a minute to get incorporated in the right way. And that's why I think they chose Jordan Bell, who at least knows the outline of what they're trying to do.
Look, I don't want to say that everything you've said up to this point is disposable. But if anything Matt said all day long stays with you, it's that. Talent in a vacuum doesn't mean it's right for the Warriors. I think that is, it's a great point. And I think it's so lost on the rest of the basketball world. Things get lost on the basketball world at times. There have been times when my friend Nick Wright, I'm wondering if he's a little lost in his basketball analysis.
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
Should we bring up the Houston Rockets, or should we just start with what's going on right
now? What do you mean? Who cares about the Rockets?
I know. First of all, I'm glad we're off to a great start. Nick Wright joins us here, Damon Ratto and Kolsky from Fox Sports. And it's been a while, so it's good to talk to you, man. How you doing?
Yeah, it's been a while. I was worried it would never happen again, along with the Warriors' relevance. But thanks to the brilliance of Steph Curry, you're relevant again, and so now you have a reason to call me. How's it going?
Well, let me ask you. Has the level of talent around Steph Curry declined enough to your satisfaction to now say he's a good basketball player because he led the team in scoring?
Before the year started, I'm going to give you a little sneak preview on a project I'm working on. The 50 best players of the last 50 years, okay? So from Kareem, essentially, to right now. So Russell, Wilt, Elgin, those guys get left out. And when I compiled it before the year, one Stephen Wardell Curry came in 13th.
Oh, that's Wardell Stephen, Nick. Wardell Stephen.
Okay, my apologies. Yep. My apologies. Did you know he was born at the same hospital as LeBron? I imagine that's probably why he's so good.
Akron, shout out.
No, there's no disrespect to Steph Curry, but this year was important. It was important for guys like me that want to be able to see every angle of the art to say, okay, we know unequivocally that, for example, if you put Russ on the 2015 or 2016 Warriors, that team is instantly demonstrably worse. That Russ couldn't have done what Steph did for those teams. But we didn't know if you put Steph on the 2017 Thunder post-KD, could Steph have done what Russ did? Win a scoring title, carry a team to the sixth seed on his back. But now we know. The answer is yes. It's unbelievable.
But if you watch before there were five straight NBA finals, if you watch Steph Curry turn the Warriors from the gang that couldn't shoot straight into the team that Andre Iguodala wanted to sign with, I mean, he already did the best player on a bad team thing for you. You just kind of missed it because the Clippers beat him.
I didn't miss it. That was not a bad team, and he did have Clay. I'm giving him love. Listen, I'm going to say something before the end of this interview that will infuriate you, but you're not going to bait me into it being about Steph. He's been sensational. And it's the only thing that could make him look better this year is if LeBron was his teammate. And luckily, it looks like that's probably going to happen in a couple years.
Never. If LeBron wants to join the Golden State Warriors, there's a possibility, but otherwise, no chance.
Sure. Yeah, why not? Why not? For ring 6 and 7? He'll get 5, or I guess it would be ring 7 and 8. He'll get 5 and 6 the next 2 years in L.A. and then go over that. I'll leave it on the board. It's open. Unless Dolan sells the Knicks, he's not going to the Knicks, and we know he's going to keep playing. So, yeah, sure, it's in play.
Why haven't you fully appreciated Juan Toscano-Anderson?
my God, I'm starting to appreciate Jordan Poole. How about that guy? So Draymond, I don't know if that was a serious question, Ray, so I'm just going to move on from it.
Think about it for a second and figure it out.
So Draymond is not the greatest defender in the history of the league, but Draymond should have 3 Defensive Player of the Year awards. The 2 that Kawhi Leonard won should have been Draymond Green's. I said that at the time. I'll say it now. And I think you did see in the fourth quarter yesterday when it looked like, oh, my God, the Warriors are going to blow this. Draymond, his ability to just be the linchpin. You know, Ben Wallace got in the Hall of Fame this weekend, and Draymond's got a lot of Ben Wallace to him. And I know people are going to say, oh, they're not similar. Well, they're similar in this regard. They are able to stop people who are much bigger than them at the rim because they know what they're doing. And so, listen, Draymond clutch client like myself, I'm coming around on him as well. You see, you're not going to get the old angry Nick Wright. Now, I do have a piece of advice for the Warriors that I don't have to give now, but just make sure we have time for it at the end because I want to see how it resonates with you guys once we're done with the Steph Curry love fest.
All right, I'm fascinated to hear your advice down the line, but I want to employ your expertise as one of the leading LeBronologists in media. What percentage, just ballpark it, What sort of percentage of healthy LeBron do you believe the Lakers need to win it again, and where do you think he's at?
Oh, I think that to win, I think in the NBA Finals, he will need to be at least 90% of what he typically is at the end of the playoffs. So, like, that's a weird algebra problem, because by the end of the playoffs, he's not at 100%. So whatever he typically is at the end of the year, he needs to be at least 90% of that. To get to the NBA Finals, I think he just has to be, like, 75%, because none of these teams can beat the Lakers. The Clippers just had the most emasculating and mortifying 36 hours in modern NBA history. The Clippers, 18 months ago, were putting up damn billboards. We run L.A. Kawhi's running commercials for his Saucony shoes, talking about how he's the king of L.A. And then they ran and hid from the Lakers' side of the bracket in an intentional tank job because, and by the way, it was also bad strategy by them. If you were ever going to beat the Lakers,
you want them early.
First round's time to do it. Like, what the hell are you guys thinking? It just makes no sense to me. I think in order to beat the Sixers or to beat the Nets, I think it'll be the Sixers, that LeBron's going to have to be nearly full strength. But luckily, the guy is superhuman, so he will be.
Nick Wright here on 95.7 The Game. What did you think of LeBron's endorsement of Curry as MVP? I don't want to lead the witness. We'll start there.
Okay, I think, like most things LeBron says, it's smart, it's thoughtful, and it's also kind of about himself. So, like, when LeBron's like, man, I know everyone points to record, but think about what that team would be without him and what their heat. It's like, oh, so you mean like in 2006 when LeBron finished second and the next two guys in minutes on his team were Eric Snow and Big Z, and they won 50 games, or in 2018 when LeBron finished second and the next two leaders on his team in minutes were J.R. Smith and Jeff Green, but they won 50 games, so wasn't enough. So I think LeBron feels like he's been screwed out of the MVP when he clearly added the most value for a situation that's similar to Steph's. I am a rarity this year, and I think Chris Paul's the MVP. I know nobody agrees with me. That's fine. Steph is obviously top four. Paul, Jokic, Embiid, and Steph, to me, are the clear top four with Giannis.
Hey, we had Wilbon on earlier today. I think he endorsed Chris Paul, too.
Yeah, here's the thing. It's not a Lifetime Achievement Award. So I'm going to bring this up not because it's a Lifetime Achievement Award, but because it validates what he did this year. I mean, the dude's done this five times now, where he goes to a team, and not only do they get way better, but they shoot past expectations. Like, he's done it every spot he's gone. The Thunder wanted to tank last year. They get to the playoffs, get the seventh seed. The Rockets get him. They win 65 games, have you guys on the ropes. The Clippers go from laughingstock to contender. And the damn Hornets went plus 25 wins his rookie season. Like, so it's not a – the numbers obviously don't support it. To me, this was Embiid or LeBron's award at the midway point. Then they both got hurt. And then everyone just convinced themselves, well, actually, when you look at adjusted BORP, Nikola Jokic is the seventh greatest player in NBA history. And so it was really impressive considering he's about to get toasted in the playoffs. So now all the smart people try to call you a casual and shame you for saying, listen, guys, if you want to just give it to the PER champion, then don't have voters. So Steph, I think, has a reasonable case. I'd be lying to you if I said I'm voting for him. I don't have a vote, but I pretend I do. I send it in. They send it back to me, but they'll give me one eventually. But I don't think it's outrageous. And I do think it matters that they were 36-27 with him. Is that right? 36-27, 34-27, something like that. They were like a 50-win pace with him. So I think that matters. I think he's got a really strong case.
This has confused me all year long. Well, it hasn't confused me, but I'll bring it up anyway. This seems to be the first year where there are a bunch of guys who are people you have to think about for MVP. And is that because so many guys were injured? Or is it because nobody can agree what MVP is anymore, so they just apply their own standards?
Oh, I think it's because, listen, I think that we have a pretty long history of we're going to err towards best player, best team if they have a dominant season, right? Problem is, it's like, oh, the Lakers are clearly the best team. LeBron's having a great season. He hasn't won the award in forever. We're going to give it to him. Then he gets hurt. It's like, okay, well, now the Sixers are going to have the best record. Embiid is just kicking people's teeth down their throat. Oh, he gets hurt. And then it's like, well, if we just pretend James Harden didn't actually play for the Houston Rockets this season, he's the most valuable. Oh, wait, he got hurt. And so that's how you land on a guy with 22% body fat and say that's the league MVP. I don't know if you guys can tell. I'm not a huge Nikola Jokic fan. Mostly, I'm not a fan of the people who are fans of his, it would appear. And we had, aside from the Russ year, you always had to be a top three seed. I think people were willing to throw that out. And so and by the way, you know, people are so funny about the MVP. If I'd have, and I didn't do this, but if I had, Damon would have played the audio and laughed at me. If at the beginning of the season, after one game, I said LeBron James is the 2021 MVP because of what he did in the playoffs last year, people would say that is an outrage. That has nothing to do with the award. But it is literally exactly what has happened to Giannis, just in the reverse. Giannis is ineligible to win the MVP. Why? Because of what happened in the playoffs last year. He won it last year. He won it the year before. Wasn't good in the playoffs. So even though Giannis, if you look at his numbers, it's like, oh, my God. He's like, and by the way, unlike Jokic, he does it on both ends of the court. He has a great case for the MVP. He won't get a single first place vote. So I think some years it's easy. Steph's unanimous year, it was easy. Some of the LeBron years, it was easy. The year KD won it with OKC, it was easy. The years where it's not easy, people just kind of make it up as they go.
I believe the year KD won it, it was easy to see his mom was the real MVP. Forget MVP, though. I want to ask about most improved player Julius Randle in the New York Knicks. I mean, you have lived in New York.
Yeah.
How insane is this going to get? And how much do you buy into the Knicks being actually pretty good?
Well, listen, I think that the Knicks deserve massive credit. Randle gets massive credit for being way better than anyone thought he was going to be. I mean, you usually don't have this type of leap this late into your career. And also, Tom Thibodeau is a great example of an A to B coach. He is like the perfect coach to get a team from where the Knicks were to this step. And they love him, and I think he should win Coach of the Year, and Knicks fans are just adore him. But 2 years from now, when they actually have expectations and they're supposed to take the next step, they'll run him out on a rail.
Right. He's Mark Jackson.
Mark Jackson. Exactly right. And by the way, you need those coaches.
Yep.
Like, I know that sounds insulting, and I guess it is insulting, but there are certain coaches that are B to C coaches or C to D coaches that would be terrible at being an A to B coach. Like, I will build it up. So there's very few guys.
Hey, Steve, Nick, I got an example for you. Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr is the get you to the mountaintop guy, not the let's start from scratch guy.
Yeah, like, I know I was joking earlier about Steph leaving. But, like, if Steph left, I think Steve would leave. Like, he's not interested in, and we don't have to go down that road. But my point, exactly right. Guys have different skill sets. But to stay on the Knicks, and more power to them, they played hard and fought every night. And so they got the best possible first-round matchup. And I'll tell you this much. The Knicks cannot beat Philly in a series if they get to the second round. But Philly will be rooting for Atlanta. Because what the Knicks will do is just take a hunk of flesh out of everyone they play. And they'll go into the next series limping. It's one of the reasons I'm so down on the Nets, is the Nets punted on the one seed in embarrassing fashion. We don't have to rehash it, but they guaranteed themselves they're going to play Milwaukee in round two. And I feel like there are, some similarities to 2016, which is part of the reason you guys lost in 16, was because you just had gone through the grueling series against OKC when the Cavs hadn't gone through that on their side of the bracket. I think that the Nets, by the time they get to the Sixers, unless the Knicks end up beating up the Sixers somewhat, the Sixers are going to have, played 9 games in a month of basketball, including against the Finesse Hawks. Meanwhile, the Nets will have just been through a 7-game war with Milwaukee and will position Philly really well for it to be a Lakers-Sixers championship.
I want you to tell us all about the top 50 lists, and you said you got a little advice on the way out the door, so we're going to get that.
Yeah.
Real quick, NBA champion Utah Jazz. Can you even try to say that?
It's so funny. No, of course not. Come on. And you guys, by the way, I think you guys take them six. You know, I got these same nerds and that are trying to tell me Nikola Jokic is having one of the 10 greatest seasons in the history of basketball, telling me this year by Rudy Gobert is the greatest defensive season anyone's ever had. And I'm like, okay, that's great. That's fun, because he's going to have to be taken off the court for moments against Steph Curry because he can't move for more than 3 feet away from the rim. Like, he's really good at what he does, but he's limited at what he does. All right, so here's the thing out the door. You guys are going to get mad, but I just want you to think about it over the next 48 hours. You guys have been in a grueling stretch, you guys being the Warriors. The game against Memphis was not easy. I think you guys should rest everyone Wednesday. Just rest. You have no reason to put Steph and Draymond, A, through the humiliation of what's awaiting them, and B, the risk of injury, and C, the extra wear and tear. You don't care if you're the 7 or the 8. You're not going to win either way. Sit your guys. You have a nice 5 days to get ready for Memphis or San Antonio. Kick your feet up, enjoy, and then get ready for Utah. That's what you should do. Deep down, you don't think it's a terrible idea. I know it, and Warrior fans hate that I'm saying it, and they think it's because I'm scared of Steph. It's not. It's just good advice. It's because I care about my friends in the Bay Area. You should take the advice. Rest your guys Wednesday.
Well, here's how you know that you and I, even though we disagree on a lot, we also think alike a little bit. I started the show saying the Warriors either need to grab the Lakers by the throat and win a game that they control, or white flag it if things are going wrong about third quarter. The last thing you want is a double overtime loss to the Lakers. You know, I mean,
that's probably the smarter path, which is Steve Kerr determined at halftime, can we take this thing? Like, tell Steph the first quarter game plan is your third quarter game plan. You know that quarter where you score 20 points and take 11 threes? Let's do that in the first quarter,
right,
and see if we can take control. And if not, let's make sure we have enough left in the tank, because you guys can beat Memphis or San Antonio pretty – I know it wasn't easy Sunday, but you should be able to beat them pretty easily, barring something unforeseen. So, yeah, we're on the same page. And then, hey, then you guys can maybe beat Utah and then beat the cowardly Clippers. If we get a Warriors-Lakers conference finals, I'm flying to the Bay. I'm flying to the Bay, and I'm Ray Ritter, who I don't think likes me anymore. I'm going to have Damon fix that relationship, and I'm going to those games.
Yeah, well, you picked the wrong guy, that's for sure, fix that relationship. But, no, look, if you do come out here for the Warriors-Lakers Western Conference Finals, I look forward to you buying me another dinner. Thank you very much.
Oh, absolutely. Goodbye, everybody. See you guys. Nice to talk to my friends in the Bay.
Don't miss Warriors Lakers Wednesday night on 95.7 The Game. Now back to Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky.
Again, thanks very much to Nick Wright for joining us. Mike Wilbon, a guest today. A couple of great guests for you on this Monday where we had a ton of basketball to talk about. I want to work locally, and then we'll go nationally, and then we'll come back locally for your question. Congratulations to the women's soccer program at Santa Clara, your 2020 national champions. They just won that thing while we were talking with Nick Wright. Girls are bouncing around that field, happy as hell. Congratulations. Lady Broncos?
Yeah.
I think they're just the Broncos.
Okay, just Broncos. Yeah, I know we've dropped. It's not even the Lady Oranges. We dropped Lady. Anyway, congratulations.
Aren't Broncos male?
That's a good question. A bucking Bronco, what does that involve? Well, they buck their way right to a championship, am I right? Oh, boy.
Gelding? Is it Gelding a female?
The Mares?
The Mares. The Mares a female.
Okay.
The Mayor of Easttown is a show on HBO that should be called Murder My Dirter. That was a pretty funny Saturday Night Live skit. Congratulations to a very good bottle of wine on winning the Preakness. Rombauer. Ray, your thoughts on Rombauer. Not the horse, but the wine.
Never had it.
You're going to like it.
I can't afford it, but there you go. And along those lines,
yes,
Bob Baffert's been banned from the track at Belmont.
Wow.
That gets a big LOL from me. Bronco, a wild or half-tamed horse of the western U.S.
So there can be
gender non-specific.
Gender non-specific.
It's a they, them.
That's right.
give me your Warriors question.
Okay, so this is something I think we can, you know, debate over the course of the next 2 days, but I'm just curious, on a cursory look, forget Nick Wright's advice. I'm not saying tanking or anything deliberate, but if you could control which of the top two seeds the Warriors faced in an actual playoff series, do you believe they got a better shot against one or the other?
I think they got a better shot against Phoenix, A, because you don't have to play four games in Salt Lake City, and two, Phoenix likes to play at a pace that the Warriors are comfortable with.
Mm-hmm. I've seen the Warriors beat the Jazz. I have seen the Warriors compete and beat the Suns. I've seen the Lakers. I'll take the Suns. Because it's just size is a problem. Utah's got more size. And the other thing that just, look, I think Utah has a very good shot at winning an NBA title. Whatever they lack in the individual that you believe is needed for the big guy who's going to win them, they're the most complete thought in basketball. The Utah Jazz are the most complete thought in basketball. They have an incredibly efficient starting five, offensively, defensively, a robust bench, a coach who knows what he's doing. Health, hopefully for them, because they were able to rest Mitchell and Connolly down the stretch. I think Utah is the team to beat until further notice. So, yeah, I'm going to take Phoenix. And I'm going to tell you right now that I like the way Steph Curry plays Chris Paul.
So that last part is definitely true. Steph's record against Chris Paul is quite good, generally speaking. I go the other way, though, and I'm finding I'm in the wild minority as I listen to and read NBA coverage heading into the playoffs. I just think they have a much better chance against the Utah Jazz. And as strange as this may sound, kind of for exactly the reason of all the nice things you just said about the Jazz, they've got no clear, you know, dominant scoring superstar. All due respect to Donovan Mitchell. You know, he's not that guy. He's great. He's not that guy. They're a complete team. Really, very much. They're incredibly well coached. They have a very specific strategy based on math that works and won them more regular season games than anyone else. 52 of the 72 games. And you know who that reminds me of? The Bucks the last couple years. The Hawks under Mike Budenholzer. A bunch of Mike Budenholzer teams, to be totally honest with you. And I don't think it's a coincidence that Quinn Snyder comes from the same coaching tree in a lot of ways. So I kind of just... and it may be that they prove me wrong. What's going to have to happen for the Jazz for me to believe in their postseason ability is for them to really prove me wrong in the postseason. I just see them as a very regular season team. And, you know, the first night the threes don't fall the way they're used to, all of a sudden the postseason gets a lot stickier. So I would like to see the Warriors against the Jazz, which I guess is to say I wouldn't mind seeing them lose the Laker game and end up in the eight seed.
Well, the last time the Warriors played Phoenix, they basically, with a much smaller lineup, removed DeAndre Ayton from the game entirely and had 62 points in the paint.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculously high for that team.
It is.
And pretty high for most teams.
They played well against the Jazz, too, though.
Yeah, but I think the Jazz have more ways to get back at you than Phoenix does.
Really?
If you can control their pace, they start to get frustrated.
Phoenix plays pretty slow, though, with Chris Paul in the lead. You know, I mean, and they got just as many, in my view, they got just as many interesting, dangerous wings. You know, Booker's obviously great. Mikal Bridges has had a really good season. It's going to be interesting either way.
What I think is that, look, you got to be able to execute in the half court, period, end of story, when the playoffs start, because we're running tonight becomes a half-court offense. The Warriors need to be in a we're running, not getting bogged down in half court. I think Utah might be able to do that a little bit better. Guess what? We have all of tomorrow and all of Wednesday to lead into it. Somebody says, Kolsky, keep it up. Glad Voltron is back and assembled. Here we are.
Hey.
We're all back in the studio for the first time since...
Say thank you to your father.
Thanks, Dad.
March 13th. Thank you, Dad. Thank you very much for tuning in. We're going to remind you to stay tuned because coming up next, you got the final word, JD and Covey. They got Mark Spears coming up at 7:30, LZ Granderson at 8:30, and it was really great having you on today. Again, thanks to Mike Wilbon and Nick Wright. Thank you, Lucas and Nash. Great stuff all the way around. We'll be back tomorrow at 2. In the meantime, remember, sports don't build character. They reveal it.
And like that. the truth.